Bem-vindos a mais um episódio do Quem Bebe por Gosto. Já há algum tempo que não partilhava um episódio apenas em áudio e este é um que vale mesmo a pena ouvir com atenção. Foi gravado durante o Biriceira 2025 e é uma conversa sobre lúpulo entre dois especialistas cervejeiros, ambos empreendedores com base em Londres. Chris Lewington, da Brew Resourceful, e Francesco Lobu, mestre na análise sensorial de lúpulos. Juntos exploram um terreno pouco palmilhado, o aroma e o sabor do lúpulo ainda no campo, e como o terroir, o clima, o solo e até o processamento podem transformar completamente o perfil aromático de uma mesma variedade de lúpulo. Há também espaço para falar de off-flavors, consistência, sustentabilidade e das novas tecnologias de lúpulo líquido que estão a mudar o mercado. Fique então com esta conversa em inglês, gravada ao vivo no Festival Biriceira 2025, Sensory of Hops com Chris e Francesco. Vamos a isso.
Well, first of all, thank you, Ericeira. Thank you, Ericeira and David, for having us here. This is a great honor. We flew all the way from London and look where we are, next to the sea. Absolutely amazing. The great front row here. Thanks for being here, guys, and listening to this talk about the Sensory of Hops. I will start by saying, you know, beer can be a very difficult topic, and my goal is to make it simple, to make it understandable, and especially when we go into sensory, there is lots of chemistry, which can sound a little bit daunting and difficult to actually grasp. So we're going to make it easy and understandable for everyone, brewers, not brewers, just beer drinkers. And if you have any question during the conversation or even after, just, you know, stop me there and ask me, you know, anything you're curious about. So sensory, as I said, is a science. And we do start our sensory journey when we are kids, like by eating anything that, you know, our parents give to us. And we start building this memory muscle that we always able to connect to a flavor that we like or to a flavor that we dislike. And being able to recognize what's into the beer, what's the sensory of this beer, like it's strictly related to your memory, to how you associate a certain flavor to something positive or negative. And so in this workshop, we're going to talk about the sensory of hops, so flavors and off flavors, and something that actually makes a huge difference in this result, which is the hop terroir. So I will start with the hop terroir because it's actually something really interesting. So we always associate the word terroir to wine. And in recent years, we start associating it even to hops. And it's something like amazing because hops are grown everywhere. You can find them in Spain, in Portugal, Italy, even in, I mean, of course, in the most famous countries like, you know, US, New Zealand, Germany. And what's really interesting and that applies in wine and actually applies with anything that is an agricultural product is the terroir. So it's like the soil, the weather, the sun exposure. And this really affects the finished product and how we smell it and what's the result in our beer. And for example, one of the most famous hops is a Cascade. Probably, I would say, the hops that started all in terms of like craft beer. So we remember 2015, there were like, you know, 90 IBUs Cascade single hops. I remember those. I was drinking them. I don't know if I can drink them anymore these days. And Cascade is grown everywhere. You can find German Cascade, US Cascade, UK Cascade, Spanish Cascade. And it's not the same, which is fantastic. So why is it not the same? Sun exposure plays a huge role. So for instance, Spain gets on average like 14 hours of sunlight a day, US 15 hours, the UK gets 17 hours a day of sunlight, which is great. And still we don't get tans.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
And the sun exposure actually and the light exposure, it gives a huge input to the plant, to the chlorophyll, like to the plant to actually grow and develop. But what actually makes a difference is how hot it is. So for instance, you would say UK gets 17 hours of sun. So that Cascade must be grapefruit, very powerful and almost tropical, let's say. And Spain gets 15 hours, 14 hours. So it's much less. So you would expect the opposite. Actually, the heat intensity in Spain is much higher than in the UK, of course. And that gives the result into the hops itself, in this case, Cascade, being very grapefruit and tangerine and, you know, citrus forward. It's very close to the American one, which is grapefruit and citrus. In the UK, you get this tea-like kind of flavor, a little bit herbal. In Germany, you get herbal, this noble hops kind of flavor. And as we said, sun exposure, heat exposure, and the soil. The soil plays a huge role. And for instance, if you are next to a river, you will have this loamy soil, which is full of rich nutrients, and that will push this grapefruit forward. In the UK, we have a lot of limescale soil, and that brings that tea-like kind of flavor. And in Germany, you get a lot of clay, so it's a little bit heavier. So you move towards the herbal, spicy. So if you can relate to a noble hops that you can find, I guess, in this Pilsner that we're drinking, like, it's interesting to see how these herbal notes, these resinous notes, actually come from a heavy soil, which is a clay soil. And what I find, like, very, very interesting is that even in the same farm, you can have a different result in the same hops. And there's been studies in the US where they were growing, for instance, Mosaic, and was the same farm. So you would expect, well, it doesn't matter from which lot of fields it's coming from. It will be super tasty, the same. But actually, if one side of your soil is next to a river, so you're more on the loamy sand side, and another side, maybe it's a little bit more in the shade, doesn't get that much sun, and it's got a little bit of clay, then the results in the same grower field is completely different. And this is like terroir into the terroir, because we would expect, like, you know, the same farm to actually have the same outputs in terms of flavor and result from a chemical point of view. So, for instance, there's been studied and been saying that the same hop in the same farm in different parts of the field had, for instance, for myrcene, which is one of the main essential oil into the hops, was ranging from 30% to 70%. It's a huge difference between 30 and 70%. And so that's why hop terroir, it's something that is coming up in the recent years. And if you're into natural wine, that's all the marketing, it's all around that. And I think as a brewer myself, we should be playing this marketing tool like a little bit more, and not only from a marketing point of view, but even as a result of your product or your craftsmanship, having something that is grown. You know, we brew this beer with Opt X, let's say Cascade, that is grown beyond my brewery, and we have this soil which brings lots of grapefruit and tangerine and maybe something else that can be replicated in another farm. That's what makes it unique.
John, can I ask you a question?
Sure, you can.
So, firstly, I guess it's kind of crazy, right? The hop terroir to me is like, terroir within terroir is like quite daunting. How do brewers look for consistency in their beer if the terroir is so different, farm to farm, place to place? How can they look for consistency?
Yeah, so the hop growers, every time they pick their hops, they do lots of tests, they do lots of analysis, and this analysis gets given to the brewer. So they're called hop COA, so certificate of analysis. And in this, it sometimes can be very short, sometimes can be a very long document. You can read like the whole life of the hops that you're using in your beer, and being able to interpret those value, it makes you understand the product, and it makes you like be consistent in your output. In an ideal world, we would love to go to our farmer and saying, can I smell all your lot of hops? And so I can pick the one that I really like, because I don't want the stuff that is growing next to the river. Actually, I like the stuff that is growing in the shade down there because it's a little bit softer. But not all of us are able to do that, unfortunately. It's just for the few. But what we have, it's knowledge, is the certificate of analysis. That's a great tool that sometimes is, it's not utilized enough. And sometimes we just look at the alpha acids. For the non-brewers, the alpha acids help you to understand how much bitterness that hops is going to bring into your beer. But alpha acids, it's just one number. There is so many more numbers that you should be looking at to understand what these hops will give to you, and how powerful it's going to be. Or maybe you need to use more, or maybe you need to use less. Yeah. I hope I answered the question.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's really where your expertise for me, because I read all your material, obviously, because we work together, I'm your mate, but I read all your material. I think some of the most fascinating stuff to me is the off flavors. So what sort of off flavors can come from hops, off flavors that you would commonly find in craft beer?
Sure. So sometimes we drink a beer and we say, yes, I like it, or I don't like it. I mean, this is entry level. And I think most of the time it's enough, because you drink what you like, and what you don't like, you don't drink. As simple as that. But if you are a brewer, if you are really into understanding where this flavor is coming from, and sometimes it can be a good flavor, sometimes it's an off flavor. So you like citrus stuff, so you will look for that flavor that comes from certain hops. Not all the hops have that flavor. But sometimes things don't go as planned, unfortunately. So let's say this beer tastes phenolic, like medicinal. That's not a taste that we like. I don't know who of you loves to go to the doctor or to the dentist. I don't. That's a flavor that I really dislike. And why is that? Where is it coming from? So the origin of this old flavor, it comes from the hop field. So if there's been some treatment for, disease of pest, sometimes if they go too heavy, this can actually stay into the finished product. And then some other times, let's say you do organic hops, you don't spray anything, but then the hops goes into the milling to become those little pellets that we put in our beer, in our product. And it can be much too aggressive and breaks the cells of the plant, of the hops. And that brings this, chlorophenol kind of off flavor. Some other times, the brewer is responsible for it. So when you get hop burn, I don't know if you ever licked a hop pellet. It's going to make, it's almost like biting into a lemon. Like, it makes you close your eyes. You're like, I don't like this. And that happens when more hops. We need to put more hops into this beer. I'm Italian, so less is more. So we do pasta with three ingredients, and it's great. And I think you should follow the same into when making beer. Keep it simple. It doesn't need that much to be more flavorful. And hop burn, it's that excess of hops, excess of green matter that then it doesn't settle into the tank, and then you find it into your glass and you're drinking it. You're like, oh my God, this thing, it's in my throat, and I can't get rid of it. And this is the brewer's fault. I'm sorry, guys. And some other times we got some sulfur compounds. So sulfur compounds is a combination of mistake. It can be the brewer, but I already slashed on them a little bit. So I'm going to move to the farmer. Again, if you are treating your plants against disease, against pests, you might use some sulfur compounds that can actually attack the plant and stay attached to it. And then you have this off flavor coming into your finished product. This happens especially if you ever open a bag of hops and it smells like almost garlic, oniony, and sulfurous. Sometimes it can be a good thing because it translates during the fermentation in something good. Some other times it just stays there and is like biting into garlic or sulfur, or rotten egg almost. And I'm forgetting something, I think, in terms of flavor. Right. Do you know when you go to the restaurant and they always ask you who's going to taste this wine? Like, they make you taste it. I mean, not because you must say, I like it, I don't like it, open another bottle, but it's mainly to smell the cork. And what you're looking for when you smell the cork, it's for the maste. It's that, like, almost moldy flavor. And this off flavor can actually be even in the hops. So if you drink a beer and it tastes musty, sometimes it can be an infection. Some other times it can come from the hops that they start growing some mold. Maybe you had, you know, too much rain, you know, with global warming and this change, you know, this weather that changed like crazy. You might have some season where it rains a lot when it shouldn't. And then you start growing disease and molds. And this then, if not caught in time, will come all the way down to your glass, which is not great. From a brewer perspective, you always need to smell your ingredients before using it. You always need to eat your grain before using it, because you are the best lab on two legs that, you know, ever invented. So you are the first one to be able to spot those off flavors before actually adding it into the beer and then, you know, wasting a whole batch of product.
How would you recommend, so if I'm a brewer listening to this and I'm like, yeah, okay, I hear those off flavors, they sound gross, I don't want them. How and where should they try and catch them?
So as soon as you receive your bag of hops and you're about to use it, you should do like a pre-sensory. So you have your hops, you rub them, you warm them up, and then you start smelling them. And that's where you can already smell, okay, there is something weird with this. Then you go back to your certificate of analysis and you can check so many values, like, you know, the percentage of moisture, and you can check if there is something that is actually different from the previous batch, or maybe is out of specification, and that can help you narrow down where the problem is coming from before actually using it into your beer. And then most likely the grower is going to say, it's your fault, it's not my fault.
Yeah, great. Do you think, you made a really interesting point earlier talking about how it's quite difficult for breweries who aren't large to go and select their lots, go out and select a farm and have a conversation with the farmer. Do you think there's value in smaller breweries building relationships with much smaller hop producers, maybe like local hop producers, to try and get that? Like, do you feel that going and selecting lots is a genuinely important part of raw material selection in hops?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, as well, like, you know, it builds community. Like, you know, you're not just buying your hops and using your hops. You know the farmer, you know their how they grow them, how much care, what's their knowledge. Like, your supplier has lots of knowledge. Just go there and grab it and ask for question and build this relationship. And if you get close enough with them, then you might get, you know, first choice. And you go there and you have maybe 10 different lots from the same variety. And we're not saying this is good, this is not good. It's just what you like the most. And then your beer will actually translate into that. And that's going to be your signature. And people will recognize for that. And they say, well, this beer is made with the same cascade, but your one, it's more citrus. How's that? Like, well, I'll go pick my hops at the farmer, you know, 10 kilometers down the road and have this great relationship with him. And I'm able to see the hops developing during the whole season. Because these days, now it's harvest time, and we see loads of hop, you know, brewers going to the farms and snapping pictures with his green wall and smelling them and rubbing them. I mean, that's cool. That's very good for Instagram. But what you would like to do is go in there before the flowers are out, because you can already spot disease and you can talk with the grower and say, what are you doing about that? Which spray are you using to preserve your product and so on. So that gives you like a great understanding, gives you like a base understanding on what to expect at the end of the season.
And what are your thoughts on like the years, so crop years? So I think I can't speak on behalf of all brewers, but the majority of brewers are always looking for the latest crop year. You know, when 24 comes out, 23 instantly becomes undesirable. Do you think there is logic in that, or what are your thoughts around it?
Look, I recently watched I saw a meme about brewers going to the farmer back in time and asking in 2013, give me all your lot of Galaxy. And I found it really funny because in 2013 or in some years, you have some exceptional lot of hops, something that like has never been as good as. And then the year after, okay, it's the freshest crop. But the year before was actually better because we had better rain condition. We had, you know, better, less disease. So we had to treat less our hops and actually it came out much, much nicer. And so, you know, year on the crop, it's just a number. It's like when they ask you for your age, you know, it's just a number. It doesn't matter. Like it's some years are really good. Some years are less good. And that's what should help you decide which crop year you should pick. But newer, it doesn't mean better all the time.
So it's kind of like a bit like wine and a vintage, right? So do you think there's like really good years of Citra, there's really good years of Mosaic, because as you were saying earlier, like the terroir is so important to that, to what happens within that hop within that year, then I'm deducting that there must be good years and bad years. Is that the case?
Yes, it's the case, because with any agricultural product, you know, you might have good vintage of wine and some bad one. Usually they say odds year are the best. I don't know if it's true, but it's the same with hops and with anything that is grown, like, you know, agricultural way.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Which good vintages of Citra Mosaic should we be looking out for? Because that's the only two hops anyone uses anyway, right? So
yeah, that's a very difficult question now. So a good 2022, I think it was a great vintage. I wasn't that happy about 2023. The reason why, I think 2022, it was bigger on that lemon, on that citrus point of view. I like everything that is citrusy. And if I want to add some tropical, I pick other hops. And I feel that 2022 was actually one of the best vintages ever, of best crops ever for Citra and Mosaic. And maybe were the lot that they picked. Like you need to imagine this huge fields that they cannot be picked up, you know, in a day. So when the harvest is ready, I start collecting my hops. And it might take me 3-4 days to finish the whole field. And if I start, I mean, usually they do not start picking when it's at peak. They start a little bit early. So, and then they mix them up. What's early is going to be less, let's say, ripe, mature fruit. And what's late is going to be very ripe fruit, like mature. It's like, have you ever bought an avocado? When it's not ripe, it tastes absolutely like nothing. And then if you let it ripening a bit, it becomes tasting more and more like almost like a peach. And that's the same that happens with hops. So ideally, we would like to pick everything when it's at the peak, when it's the right moment. But from a logistic point of view, that's not possible. So then that's why they get bland and, you know, the quality is average good. But it could be much, much better if everything was picked at the right time.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd also love to think, so I like to think like if I was a brewer, I have been a brewer, but if I was right now and I had a brewery and I wanted to test the terroir of, you know, a specific hop to really see how important that is. You mentioned earlier Cascade. Is that a good hop to do it? And where can people get it? And what can they expect from the differences of, you know, you like Cascade grown in different areas of the world? You know, especially like New Zealand, the States. I mean, I don't know if anyone really uses UK Cascade, to be honest. But if they did, what would they expect? I think it's grown in Spain, right, and other places. Yeah. So
Cascade is a good one because you can actually use it for bitterness as you can use it for aroma. So you potentially, the way forward for this, it would be to do a single hop.
Then I might like
normal ALA, nothing too crazy.
I'm going to use,
and then now use only pairing Cascade from Spain,
Cascade from Rouen, Cascade Germany.
I'm like, this is, and then do a pale ale orange and see tangerine. Okay, this is Cascade from Germany.
Like, I really like it. It's powerful.
Yeah, this aroma, herbal. This is a spice of flavors.
Tastes like
And then I use the American one. And I'm like, well, it's grapefruit. It's not that different. It's almost on the same kind of level. And then I'm like, well, let's try this one with the UK Cascade.
And because of the soil, because of the terroir, like this beer is actually going to taste more like tea-like, like slight herbal, much more delicate. Why? Because despite the very long light exposure, it doesn't get very hot in the UK, unfortunately, yet. And that doesn't help the plant developing all this oil in such a strong way as it is in Spain or in the US. And so, yeah, that's the way, if you really are interested into terroir and taste, okay, what's the difference between all these hops that are on paper are the same. In real life, they're really not.
Yeah. So how is, I assume that climate change that we're seeing quite often, well, you see it every year, you're definitely seeing it more in some, in definitely the UK, we're seeing the effects of it more on heat, lack of rainfall, etc. How is climate change affecting hop terroir? And as a brewer, will the hop look the same in, or smell the same in 5 years' time, do you think?
Well, in 5 years' time, they will change 100%. The bitterness will decline because the climate change. So we will need to use more hops to actually get the same bitterness that we get now. In terms of aroma, it will modify. It will be muted. Why? Because like now in the UK, you're able to grow melons. 10 years ago, you weren't able to grow melons. So what do you think will happen to the hops? They will actually come up with more the tropical side of it. And all the classic British beer, like a golden ale, which is meant to be tasty like a hay, herbal, like imagine drinking a golden ale and it tastes of maracuja. And you're like, well, I wasn't expecting this. So yeah, it will definitely change. It's affecting us. And some hops won't be there anymore because of climate change. They won't. Now there are, like, you know, the growers are developing hops that are climate resistant, disease resistant. And again, this is already a change. They tell you, yeah, it's like that one, but it's not that one. It's different. And we need to start adapting and to do, you know, the best with what we have.
Awesome. I'm going to go off piste. Only because there was a few people when we were telling them about the talk yesterday, they were curious about hop products, specifically the new gen of liquid hop products, probably not hop extracts. I think they're still... a lot of question marks over those, in my opinion. But liquid hop products generally look quite exciting. What are the good sides, but what are the bad sides of using liquid hop products as opposed to the T90 yeah. pellet, the classic?
So as a human, I think everyone likes to have the, you know, the magic wand and be like, yes, I'm just going to pour this potion in and it's going to make my beer taste absolutely phenomenal. We love that. And we love to think that actually, you know, the secret recipe and the easy way exist. Unfortunately, it doesn't. Of course, you know, this technology is great. What they are developing from a scientific point of view is amazing because consistency is there, is into a little bottle. And you can just add it all the time, the same amount. You will get the same result. It's great. From a sensory point of view, it might get a little bit monotone. So you need to layer the flavors. And T90, which is the type of hops the most used, it gives you that. And why gives you that? Because, yes, it's got the lupulin, it's got the flavor, but it's got even the green matter. And that gives to the finished product something more rounded and, you know, more dimension of flavors. Like, imagine opening, you know, putting a beer and be like, yes, this smells like grapefruit. And then you drink it and it tastes like nothing. It's got nothing. But it smells like grapefruit. That's amazing. When we drink a beer, this is, you know, is an experience. You know, I want to smell it. I want to taste it. And I want to taste it even after I swallow it. And that's possible if you build flavors in layers, which is possible only if you're using T90, maybe in combination with the cryogenic one, and maybe a little bit of liquid ops, if that helps you. Then now the push on this liquid product is because it makes you save money. So you spend a lot for them, but they give you more beer in return because the hops, they absorb the product. So some of the beer is going to go into the hops and you're going to dump it because you're not going to scoop a pint of hops. So So yeah, I mean, I'm not against. I'm just I think that everything needs to be used in balance, and it needs to be built in layers.
Yeah, it seems to me that there is a big push to move away from T90s. I think from something to do with brewers, maybe, but mainly from the hop companies themselves. There seems to be everyone's trying to find the next T90 that everyone's using. Do you think brewers in 10 years' time will still be using T90s? Or do you think that they're going to be replaced?
Well, I hope so. Otherwise, I won't like their beers anymore. But no, I think, you know, brewers are smart people, and they're, you know, it's a science. It's not we like to call it an art, but it's a science. And brewers will learn and will try, and they will find their you know, the right combination of all these products for, you know, their to reach their end results.
Hmm. Yeah. I agree, Eamon. I hope that the future still has them in. Yeah, I think it'll be good. Are we good for time?
I think we're good. We just hit the mark.
All
if
right.
you guys have any question about hops, maybe not just right now, but while we walk around, please stop me and we can talk all things hops.
Yeah, I'm up on next talking about sustainability, but I desperately need a hat or some sun cream or something for I literally burn and incinerate. So yeah, thank you so much to everyone who came and listened. As Francesco said, please come around and speak to us. We're here all day today and a little bit of tomorrow as well. We're always keen to talk about hops, sustainability, whatever it is. So yeah, thank you so much for everyone for attending, and I'll see you shortly back on this stage.
Thank you, Chris.
Espero que tenhas gostado deste episódio. Se foi o caso, peço-te para deixares uma avaliação de 5 estrelas na tua plataforma de podcast preferida e seguires o podcast para não perderes as próximas conversas, incluindo outras que gravámos durante o Biriceira e que vão sair nas próximas semanas. Se não for antes, vemo-nos na próxima cerveja.